Good afternoon. You're listening to All Things Considered here on KTOO. In the newsroom, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. An Arctic front arrived in Juneau this morning, bringing high winds and extreme cold temperatures. National Weather Service meteorologist Nicole Farron says temperatures will get progressively colder into the weekend and through early next week, with highs in the single digits. Monday's high is predicted to be just 4 degrees.
Make those kids put on a coat when they're going to the bus stop. Your teenager's not going to, a hoodie's not going to cut it on Monday.
A high wind watch is in effect this evening through Saturday as a high pressure system in the Yukon pushes cold air across the region. Wind speeds downtown will reach 30 to 40 miles per hour with gusts up to 60 miles per hour. That could damage trees and power lines. Forecasts say there will be prolonged periods of sub-zero temperatures.
These are some of the coldest temperatures I've ever seen working here in 10 years. So if your pipes haven't froze before, this might be the first time.
Plumber Joel Mitchell of American Home Service recommends running a cold water tap in both the front and the back of the house for the duration of the cold snap.
So just trickle it, right? So it doesn't stop flowing, right? Once the water stops flowing is when it has a problem with freezing.
Mitchell also recommends opening the cabinets under kitchen and bathroom sinks to allow warm airflow. Make sure you know where your shutoff main water valve is in case the pipes do freeze and split. The city's cold weather emergency shelter at the Resurrection Lutheran Church will also be operating all weekend with cots and blankets for anyone who needs a warm place to sleep. The shelter typically opens at 10:30 at night, but with temperatures below 20 degrees, it will operate from 9 o'clock to 7 a.m. daily for the next several days. And even after the cold snap lifts, the shelter will be open every night through Christmas. The Juneau Teachers Union has declared an impasse in its negotiations over a new contract with the school district. The district's initial proposal included a pay increase similar to what the union asked for, but it also included a 25% cut to health care contributions, which means teachers would have to pay an extra $400 per month next year. Juneau Education Association President Chris Heidemann says that's a major concern, especially for young teachers.
That's a huge, huge cost for our members, especially the early career teachers who are farther down on our salary schedule, who aren't married, oftentimes single, living on their own, and don't really have other options for health insurance. That could be devastating to them.
The union and the district have been negotiating for 10 months. The previous contract expired in June. Thunder Mountain High School history teacher Jamie Marks says the wait has been frustrating, especially after the pandemic brought additional stress to teachers.
I don't feel that the district is unwilling to award a reasonable contract to teachers. I'm upset that over the last 3 years, we have given what we have given, and the board has not seen the need to be quicker in its response so that we're feeling respected, et cetera.
Several teachers expressed similar feelings at this week's school board meeting. Juneau School District Superintendent Bridget Weiss says it's hard to hear.
It is stressful on everyone the longer these negotiations go. And when teachers or any staff begin to feel undervalued, it's heartbreaking.
She says the proposed health contribution cuts were meant to prompt discussions with the union about funding priorities. Discussions will continue in the coming months with the help of a federal mediator. Heidemann says he expects mediation to begin in January. Four organizations in Juneau will receive funding for new housing projects through the city's Affordable Housing Fund. The Juneau Assembly approved $2 million in grants and loans from the fund this week. AWARE is a nonprofit that supports victims of domestic and sexual violence. They'll receive a $200,000 grant to develop 7 affordable studios in Douglas. Executive Director Mandy O'Neill Cole says she's looking forward to offering housing there.
I think it's a really good message to survivors, to people who are making kind of the low end of the area median income, to say you get to live in cool neighborhoods and you get to have, the same kind of beautiful view and like access to transportation that other people have as well.
Cole says that the units will help give survivors more privacy and independence than shelters or transitional housing. The goal is to complete construction by summer. Other recipients include St. Vincent de Paul, which will put the funds towards maintenance at its Teal Street shelter in the Mendenhall Valley. The Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority also received a grant to build 10 affordable homes in North Douglas. The fourth recipient will receive a loan instead of a grant. Rooftop Properties will borrow $1.2 million from the city to build 24 mixed-income units. 19 units will be market rate, while the other five will be slightly less expensive. Joseph Myers is the city's housing and land use specialist. He says it's important for the city to try to meet all housing needs.
Obviously, there is a need in the community for market rate housing at this time. So, you know, it was just kind of the right mixture of affordable and market rate. Kind of takes all types of housing to make a community.
And finally, tonight, the Arctic Report Card came out earlier this week. It's the scientific community's annual report on the health, the climate health of the region. And this year, it includes a new chapter on the way climate change is impacting Alaska Native communities in the Arctic. And the chapter's authors are calling for more collaboration between scientists and Indigenous experts. KTOO's Anna Canny has that story.
In September, the remnants of Typhoon Murbach lashed the coast of western Alaska with 50-foot waves and hurricane-force winds.
Just changed the environment in a way that we didn't expect it to happen.
Vera Kingakup Metcalf witnessed Murbach firsthand from her home in Nome. The storm brought severe flooding to communities along the Bering Sea. Hunting camps were wiped out, fall hunts were delayed, and power outages caused losses of meat that was already gathered. It's just one example of the way climate change is threatening Alaska Native communities in a rapidly warming Arctic. Metcalf and a team of more than 40 scientists and Indigenous experts wrote about Murbach and other climate impacts in a new chapter for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's annual Arctic Report Card, which came out this week. Indigenous food systems and traditions in the Arctic are tied to a cold, icy environment. The science in this year's report card shows that those conditions are now harder to rely on. More rain and less ice are making food resources scarcer and harder to get to. Metcalf says sea ice, siku in Yupik, characterizes the seasons in the Arctic.
It's a very powerful presence in our relationship with our world. It really defines our seasons and activities. And right now here in Nome, we don't have sea ice yet, and it's the middle of December.
According to the report, sea ice continues to form later across the Arctic, and its summer extent in 2022 was much lower than the long-term average. That leaves coastal communities vulnerable to storms like Murbach. It also threatens food security.
Traditional hunting seasons seems to be dissolving and blending together. You know, hunter safety. Our hunters are traveling further with less sea ice and disruptive stormy weather during some of our hunting trips.
Changes in precipitation can threaten Indigenous food systems, too. This year was the third wettest year on record for the Arctic, and more precipitation is coming as rain instead of snow. Freezing rain events are a special threat. The resulting ice layer can disrupt foraging for important species like caribou. Metcalf says she learned a lot from collaborating with scientific researchers on the report. But she adds that bringing the two knowledge systems together can be challenging.
How this actually happens is can be complicated because Indigenous knowledge and science should not be used, for example, to verify each other.
One thing Metcalf and her colleagues emphasize is the importance of including more on-the-ground observations from Indigenous knowledge holders in future reports.
Our own experts are living the environment, are there, seeing the changes happening in our waters and our lands, and often are the first to report these unusual changes.
The chapter takes a more holistic approach than the rest of the report. It doesn't focus on one particular year. Rather, it acknowledges the compounding impacts of climate change.
It's a ripple effect. It impacts the people, it impacts their traditional lifestyle, and then it impacts what's coming the next season.
Jackie Catalina Schaefer is the Director of Climate Initiatives at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. She's also a co-author on the new chapter. Despite the profound changes in the Arctic, both Metcalf and Schaefer say Indigenous values around food prevail.
We don't say, and we definitely don't think it and put it out into the universe, that there's not going to be any berries. We hope, we live on that thread of hope that there's going to be berries, whether they show up or not.
Schaefer believes this new chapter in the Arctic Report card is a way to infuse more of that hope into conversations about climate change in the Arctic.
The narrative, if you just focus on the science and the monitoring, could be very scary, and we don't want people to be scared.
The authors hope to expand their contribution in future editions of the Arctic Report card. And throughout the rest of the year, they are working to combine science and Indigenous expertise on projects that will help Alaska Native communities adapt to a new Arctic. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.